Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. It's budget season in Prince George's County, and there's a lot of political number crunching going on. There are also hot-button issues outside of budget negotiations that could also impact county residents and even visitors to the county. Joining me to talk about all of this is Prince George's County Council Chair Walla Blagay. If you have a comment or a question or an issue that you need to talk about in Prince George's County, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Our Council Chair, thank you so much for joining us again. I appreciate you coming in.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to come here and discuss the great issues, issues impacting Prince George's County.
Well, let's talk about an issue that came up yesterday. You were part of a press conference that spoke about nursing shortages in the county as well as other health workers. The county council passed a non-binding resolution to study the shortages. Explain what that's about.
And let me just say, I know, you know, for many people, this is about highlighting the issue and started to highlight that this is a problem. I worked at the DC Nurses Association for 8 years before I became a council member. And one thing I saw, and I didn't know until I really represented nurses, is that safe staffing is one of the biggest issues that's impacting quality health care in the region. And I've seen really concerning numbers in Prince George's County. Let me just say this. Think about an ICU patient. An ICU patient needs a nurse by their side at every minute. A ratio requires, a safe ratio, requires no more than 1 to 2 patients per nurse. But in Prince George's County, we have some of our healthcare facilities that are having up to 3 to 4 patients in an ICU unit. And what we're seeing is that that's dangerous. That's impacting the long wait times. At the National Capital Region, many of our residents are complaining. They're coming there. They're staying a long time. They haven't seen the staffs when they get in the room. It's because of the ratios. You cannot move a patient out of an emergency room until you have adequate staff in other units. That's why we're experiencing the long wait time. So the reality is that nurses are overworked and they're leaving the bedside high number. We already have a nursing shortage, but our shortage, a nurse can be a nurse and do other things. They can do a record review. But what we want them at is at the bedside, because that's what we think about a nurse. We think about that person as at by your side at every point. So what this bill does is that it requires the Board of Health to start inquiring to all of our healthcare facilities to see what are the ratios. And when we gather that information, we're sending it to the state to say, this is a problem, and this is a problem that we need actual state law to address it. Because right now, our stakeholders don't understand how important this is.
Why now? This issue certainly isn't a new issue. So why did you, push this resolution now?
Well, I would say there are two things. Number one, I just got on the council, and I really felt like it was my duty. As I said, I'd spent 8 years working on this in the District of Columbia and working with our National Nurses United that's been pushing it on a national level. We've met with nurses that are in California that have staffing ratios on law and how much it impacts their outcomes. The reality is that their nurses are staying longer at the bedside and they have better outcomes when things can happen. Human mistakes happen when you juggle too many balls at once. Even in Massachusetts, they passed a law that required safe staffing in an ICU, which is very critical. So I want the state that I live in and the county that I live in to be the next on this list. And I do feel like it's time, because I'm here and it's my duty with the knowledge that I have to share it with the residents to protect the residents of Prince George's County. Number two, we opened a hospital in Prince George's County, and from day one, the National Capital Region, which is supposed to be one of the biggest healthcare facilities in my district, And our trauma hospital in Prince George's County has been full to the brink since day one.
And
people are complaining. I don't want people to continue to complain that they're not getting quality health care in my community. So I'm looking at the hospital right next door to the council building, to my home, and looking at it and saying, okay, so we need safe staffing ratios there, because at this point, we have staff overworked, and you heard from the nurses that worked at that very hospital. Staff overworked and feeling that the pressure of working in an unsafe environment. Understand, a nurse cannot, as you yesterday at the press conference, this woman made it clear. Three nurses come in and it's 30 patients. Yeah. That means one nurse is caring for 10 patients. That's dangerous. You're never going to see the nurse. In fact, the nurse might miss something and something could happen. And the reality is that if nurses walk, a nurse can't walk away. Legally, a nurse has to stay, because if you say, I'm not going to take care of these patients, it's patient abandonment and you could lose your license.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to Prince George's County Council Vice Chair Walla Blagay. We're talking about all things Prince George's County, budgets and other issues. If you have a comment or a question for the Vice Chair, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. So with that said, if I understand correctly, this resolution will allow you to study this issue?
Well, yeah, it puts our Board of Health, it requires our Board of Health to actually inquire in all healthcare facilities, gather the information, and then we will send it to the state. The reality is that without this resolution allows us to highlight it, but it also, it gives a requirement to our county government to look into it. From the county, we did look at actually implementing ratios, but we don't really, a lot of the regulation of our healthcare facilities relies at the state. We've reached out to state officials to take action, but they don't quite know or understand what the seriousness of this or how it impacts the healthcare system. In fact, most of the focus has been on the lack of doctors. That's something that's a huge issue in Prince George's County, as our ratio of residents to a doctor and even specialists is really worse than anyone in the state. We're one of the worst. So one of the, you know, the state officials are focused on that right now. So what we're saying is that ratios are going to be, it's going to be, you know, a lot of hospitals don't like them. Because they want to be able to make, this is a bottom line. You have a number of nurses per unit. And if the more nurses that you have to hire for that hour or for that shift, that's more money that's on the books. You know, in the District of Columbia, we fought this with many hospitals and tried to get ratios passed there. And we got a huge fight against the hospital association. And so we want to make sure that when we start to say, okay, now it's time to do it at the state level, we have the data. And that we don't have to fight the hospital association or everything, because now people can see it's a real problem.
When do you expect a study to start, to be completed, and to be sent to state lawmakers in Annapolis?
We hope very soon. We're going to start now. Like, we're starting. Our staff is starting. We have our first Board of Health meeting June 6th. So we're going to start getting our staff to start doing the research on this and getting the actual data. And then hopefully, you know, within a year, we're looking at getting something over to the state and getting our state delegates to understand how important this is, and our state senators. But sometimes with some people just need to see how the data and what's going on. And for the county, we want to be a leader on this.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking all things Prince George's County with Council Vice Chair Walla Blagay. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Michael, calling from Prince George's County. Thanks for calling, Michael. What's on your mind? Michael, are you there?
Hello?
Yeah, go right ahead, please.
I was just calling about some of the services diminishing within the county. I noticed that our, like, median highways full of grass. Our parks don't look the same. There's a lot of our area that just look like it's diminishing. I'm hearing that a lot of people are coming from Montgomery County working within Prince George's County. I want to know, what's that all about?
Thank you so much. Great question. And I would say this, litter and even upkeep of our roads have been one of the biggest issues our constituents complain about. It got to a record high of concern under Larry Hogan's administration. And this was during the pandemic. We saw grass as high as I had signs out and the grass was higher than the signs that I had out. So what
Vietnam era elephant grass high. But go ahead. Yeah.
So what we decided to do is that when we got in, we reached out to the governor. Even today, I met with someone from the governor's staff. And what we're focused on is cleaning up our main roads. Our main roads, one of the main things that people complain about has been our state roads. And my district is 214, 202. We're trying to get those clean. And what they are trying to do at the state level is get a list of a requirement of reporting of how often they're going to come and actually clean those roads. So we're going to see improvement. The governor's office has pledged to increase cleaning up of those roads. And I would say this, it's disappointing to say, you know, what they did tell us is that as soon as these roads are clean, within 24 hours, they're trashed again. And I would say that I've seen even trash in places that you can't even get to unless you really have to get out of your car and climb over a fence. So we're kind of like hoping that people would understand to help clean up our roads. But I would say this, when we're looking at the budget, we're looking at anti-litter campaign. We're looking at the county executive has submitted some bills when it comes to an illegal dumping, fining, and so we're actually looking at ways to improve the litter in Prince George's County. This has been an issue that's been beyond me. 20, 30 years ago, people were complaining about the same thing. Mm-hmm. The reality is that we are going to be working, especially on the state, to clean up, especially the main roads, those main state roads.
Michael, thank you so much for your phone call, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Before I go back to the phone lines, Dr. Perry calling from Maryland, we are going to get to you because you have a question about this issue regarding or comment about the nurses. But I want to talk to you about your proposed townhouse moratorium. What is it? Why is this important to you? Why do you think it's such a hot button issue?
Well, the reality is that it's an infrastructure problem. And that's what we've been highlighting to many people. And many people in the community are like, we are not expanding we have not really did road upgrades. Our schools don't necessarily, we have overcrowded schools. And we have a huge public safety issue. So right now, when you meet with the firefighters, they always tell you, we've increased the number of residents in Prince George's County substantially, and we don't necessarily have the public safety staff, the firefighters, to support the increases that we have. And there's high overtime and overworked staff and fire. But even more so, it's time for us to build up the areas that we really are supposed to focus on. So we have economic centers like Largo, like New Carrollton, like College Park, even National Harbor, and other areas where we have metro stations where we don't have much development around them. But what we're doing is that we're developing at every two-lane road in suburbia and building out sprawl. It doesn't help our economic development because at the end of the day, when retailers come to Prince George's County, they're going to look at one area and what they want to know is what's just right there. And I'll give you an example. I'm representing Westphalia, a newer community, and we're looking at trying to get development there. And, you know, when you get to Westphalia, the reality is that I'm not just looking at Westphalia. All I can think is like, well, if you go down the road, you got houses everywhere. But what retailers are telling us is what's right at Westphalia. And so what we realize is that we have to densify certain communities. We don't have the centers. If you look at Montgomery County, you're looking at Silver Spring, Bethesda. You can almost, in most areas in our surrounding districts, you can tell the main areas in those counties. But what's the main area in Prince George's County? It's really hard because of the sprawl that we have. It's really hard to identify for many.
So let me ask you, what difference does it make whether it's a townhouse or single family home? You can't stop people from moving to the county if they want to move. And if you don't have housing, if you build single family homes, wouldn't that really change the kind of
I guess that would change not only the number of people who can move, but also the economic demographic. Townhouses are obviously are traditionally less expensive than single family homes. So you're saying a moratorium on townhouses and do what? Build more single family homes?
So what we're actually saying it in non-transit areas. So we are saying that you can build townhomes in all of the transit areas, and even our local area centers where we're focusing our infrastructure, you can build. But what we're saying is that other areas do not have the infrastructure for townhomes. In the same area that you can do 25 single family homes, you can do about 250 townhomes. And the problem is that density means more traffic, right, more people. What comes with that is more families that need schools, more public safety needs, more road infrastructure. And right now we have a $5 billion budget. Almost 60% of that is going to the school system. Another $1 billion is going to law enforcement. And then the $2 billion that we have is going to everything else. We don't have the money. If you look at our capital improvement budget, we are literally fighting over six-year improvements for little projects here and there that won't be funded anytime soon. So the reality is that what I'm dealing with is that there's been a lot of infrastructure issues, because I am in a district where we have townhouses in on a side road that doesn't have any commercial development, that doesn't have a school, a designated school really in the area, and doesn't have the road infrastructure. I just want to note this: for every school, every road, people talk about infrastructure. To put up a stop sign, a stoplight, it costs $1 million.
Yeah, that and a lot of people don't realize that. But with knowing that this is an issue, and obviously there is no bibbidi bobbidi boo magic wand to just make schools appear, but if schools, and you can tell me, are schools the main issue, or is it commerce that to support the housing? You spoke about schools several times. There aren't enough schools. The schools are crowded. So why not make that the priority?
Well, because it's all of that. That's the problem with putting houses in places that you don't have an infrastructure. You have to get the road infrastructure. You need the school, or else you're going to have dissatisfied residents. Or you're going to need to look at a commercial development, trying to put something near there. The point is that what we're talking about, there is no commercial development. They're small shops. We have a shopping center problem. We have over 250 shopping centers, and only 50 of them are really active and really thriving. So we don't need to actually build small shopping centers everywhere. What we need to do is build economic centers. We need the places where we have retail and we have business and we have all of that. And putting townhomes in random places that are not even close to those does nothing. All it does, it makes us spend more money. And I would just say this about the affordability. Affordability requires actually designated affordable housing. The housing that we're talking about $500,000 townhomes. That's not affordable.
No.
And so in order for you to have actual affordable housing, which we do have affordable housing in a pipeline, you have to designate it. You have to put funding into it. You have to put a whole process to make sure, from federal funding to working with the state to working even with the local county government, to designate that as affordable housing. If not, it's not affordable. So we're not talking about, some people say, well, that's the starter house. That was a starter house 10, 20 years ago. But right now, if we're looking at, you go to Westphalia, a townhome in my district, you're looking at $600,000.
Or more.
So we're not, this isn't affordable housing. So we're, I say schools because schools is part of the need. But when you talk about retail, the retail
need. Hold that point. I've got to take a break. And we've got a lot of folks on the line as well. Mm-hmm. Dr. Perry, I haven't forgotten about you. Sherelle calling from Maryland. Thomas calling from Capitol Heights. We're going to talk to all of you. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We continue this conversation on Sirius XM in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are talking all things Prince George's County with Prince George's County Council Vice Chair Walla Blagay. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. I want to go back to this housing issue. So, and I want to make sure that our listeners understand, a moratorium, you're not talking about a blanket moratorium?
No.
Okay.
And we're going to put information out so it's clear, because most people are like, oh, we're happy for the moratorium. But some people are like, well, everywhere? And it's like, no, it's not everywhere. It's only in certain non-transit. And I said certain non-transit areas because there are certain areas that are not necessarily transit, like National Harbor, like, you know, they're like Westphalia or even Oxon Hill, but still part, like, you know, townhouses can move forward in some of those areas. So we're going to put the list out, release the list tomorrow so people can know that it's not everywhere, but it is, and there are places that it does impact because of the fact that we do need to make sure that we focus our development, and we want, you know, it's about focusing our development. Let's build the infrastructure while we're building the homes.
You said put out the list. We who, what list?
Well, the council, from my perspective, there have been some people that said, is it blanket moratorium? And some of the TV coverage of it has sort of stated it as if it's a blanket moratorium. So we want to make sure people understand that it's not. And so we're going to be, my office will be releasing a list of places that it doesn't apply to, so that people would understand that.
Okay, very well. Hopefully we'll get the list before everyone else will.
Okay, well, that'll be right. You're here first tonight on WHUR.
All right.
Okay.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Perry calling from Maryland. Thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you.
Sure.
Carol. I want to compliment the council vice chair. She's saying a lot of great things there. But more importantly, I want to talk about the hospital situation and nurses and just a little bit about that housing piece. But with the hospital and the lack of nurses, it doesn't sound like it's a lack of nurses that you can hire. But it sounds like it's a facility issue.
Right.
There are not enough facilities around where these nurses that are graduating from the HBCUs or other colleges can actually come and work. So it really seems like a planning issue on how you can build more urgent care facilities in areas that there's a desert or a need for it. And then the other thing I wanted to say is that when you were talking about townhomes, I think TOD areas.
TOD?
TOD
well.
Is, he's in the industry, transit-oriented development. It's
yeah,
very.
Okay. Most of our. Most
that's
of
what
our
we call it in the office, TODs.
Yeah. Help me out, Doc. Okay, go right ahead, please.
And so we can see a place for mixed use where you can have a townhouse and maybe have a storefront or what have you with that townhouse. So that can help folks with limited, you know, money to start a business to be able to own a home and maybe have a storefront. So I hope that you look at some of these areas where we could have more economic development in the African-American community by having businesses that are placed in areas where you can have a home, like a townhouse, and commercial use to use some of that mixed use HUD money. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Dr.
Thank
Berry.
You. And I want to say this. I want to address the first comment about we have nurses coming into the field. It's always a shortage of nurses. But what's a bigger shortage is nurses who stay at the bedside. Understand, we have nurses who start out even from Bowie State and all of the HBCUs that come in and start out, but they don't stay. And the reason why is because they're so burnt out and they're afraid. If you come to work with 10 patients, you're thinking about your license. Something could happen. You could end up before the Board of Nursing. So what's happening is that we have the nurses sometimes coming in and we need more. But what is a bigger shortage is those who stay. These nurses are looking for ways out of bedside within 3 to 4 or 5 years. Whereas, you know, I remember just when I represented nurses, you had nurses that worked 30, 40 years at the bedside before they retired. But a newer generation isn't staying at the bedside that long because it's wearing and it's scary.
Well, to that point, and I remember certainly during the height of the pandemic, we had newly graduated nurses who had been, prior to the pandemic, extremely enthusiastic about pursuing this career, you know, since they were children. But certainly the stresses of the pandemic did quite a bit to impact how nurses feel about the job. But with that said, and this came out just today, this was a press release from National Nurses United, and it says quite a bit, but one of the things that it does say is that it's the government's job to impose mandatory staffing standards on the hospital industry to ensure optimal patient care. When that occurs, nurses who are currently working in hospital bedsides will stay in their jobs, and many of those who left will come back to the bedside. So you're saying that any governmental mandate is to impact hospital management/ownership to I hate to use the word force, but I'm going to say force them to hire more nurses.
Yeah, and that's actually what we do believe will help. And I worked with the National Nurses United when I worked in the local D.C. Nurses Association. And what we talked about is that the reality is that many of the hospitals are understaffing the units to save money. So they are, like, trying to say bottom line, like, okay, we don't need that much staff, so we're going to, you know, we might need 5 nurses, but we're only going to schedule 3. And then one calls out, now you got 2, and you got a dangerous situation. But the healthcare industry, the healthcare facility is saving money because they have less people working at that time, especially when you start getting travel nurses and things like that. One reason why travel nurses have actually grown is due to this whole crate, the way that bedside has worked. People want to be able to say, I don't want to work these long hours. I don't want to have work these long hours in dangerous situations. So if I'm a travel nurse, I can pick the facility I want to work with.
But let's be clear. Mm-hmm. Travel nurses make a whole lot of money. There's a lot of money. I have a friend of mine who has shared some eye-popping compensation.
Right.
For being a travel nurse. And if you are single, or if you have adult children, you have the wherewithal to do that traveling. And I'm not, I'm talking about $60, $70, $80, $100 an hour, and stays of weeks on end, where they're paying for your flight, where they're paying for your hotel. That's a pretty lucrative pursuit.
But it's also expensive for the healthcare facilities.
Yeah, travel nurses, I'm a nurse, I don't care about that. No, because I'm getting paid.
And I understand that, but the thing is that people are leaving full-time jobs to go for travel nurses to be able to have more control over their schedule because they are overworked and they want to be able to control their life. And you can't blame them for that, but the reality is that you don't want all of your nurses to become travel nurses.
No, you most certainly
don't. And that's
don't.
What's starting to happen, especially the pandemic only worsened it. It was already a problem before, but the pandemic made it worse. Why? Because now you're working in a dangerous situation. You have a lot of nurses who left the bedside because they really, the pandemic scared them. And the reality is that you had a lot of people that left and became travel nurses.
Let's move on to a caller. Let's go to Sherelle calling from Maryland. You want to talk about housing. Sherelle, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I just have a question.
Sure.
I live in PG County, Westphalia area, Sansbury area. Mm-hmm. Sansbury Road is really undeveloped in a certain area where they don't have community sewer. We have water. I own a property and find it very difficult for me to obtain sewer on the property once it was on there. Sewer system got crushed. But I've been dealing with PG County for 5 years. To try to get a sewer system on a property that once housed a mobile home. Well, now that I'm got the county and the state involved and wanting to help, I now have to look for another type of home, because now I'm hearing that PG County no longer allows mobile homes to be put up on properties. I felt that I should have been grandfathered in because I've been waiting 5 years to get it there. It was taken down. And while taken down, the system got crushed. And like I stated, for 5 years, been trying to get it. What can we do, number one, with trying to figure out why is it taking PG County so long to process anybody for getting sewer and septic? And why not mobile homes on a property that was once there?
Thank you, Sherelle. Go right ahead.
So we had a recent meeting on a septic system. I would tell you, we are working with WSSC. I have quite a few. You are in District 6, and I represent you. We have Brock Hall, a lot of other people where they're trying to go from septic to bring to WSSC. The reality is that requirement costs around millions of dollars. We are not legally allowed to add that increased cost to other residents through their paying WSSC. We are looking at earmarks at the federal level to address it. I would actually say if you could email Council District 6 at co.pg.md.us, we can address it, because what we do have is there's going to be a survey going out to communities that are on septic to see where they stand and whether they want to be added to the line. We are looking for money for it, and it costs millions. And that's what I'm talking about with the infrastructure problems we have. We're putting cart before the horse. In the Westphalia area, not only are we looking at road infrastructure that is serious, no lights, no traffic lights, no traffic signs, no stop signs, but we also have a lot of communities still on septic and not on the water and sewer line, and we got to look for money for that. And when I'm saying just one community we were looking at, that's $24 million that I got to find.
So to Sherelle's point, hold on, Sherelle, because I've got a lot of callers on, and we've got some other issues. I would, however, recommend, as the vice chair said, to certainly reach out to her office so that you can have a more detailed conversation, and quite possibly, because you are in her district, that she may be able to assist. But thank you so much for your phone call. I guess the thing that I'm hearing, at least from you, and plain terms, is we don't have any money. And if we don't have any money, what does that mean for current residents, for the Sherelles, as well as those who are thinking about moving to the county? Townhouse, apartment, McMansion, or whatever.
What it means is that's why we got to focus our development, because it's not that we don't have any money. It's that the money we have, we're on a budget. We're on a tight budget where we don't have a whole lot of money to spend on things like infrastructure, things like building a new school, things like building out, adding a group, in the engineering that's going to take to add whole neighborhoods to the water sewer line. So that means that we got to pick and choose how we spend our money. And what I'm trying to do is control it so that I don't have to increase the number of residents that myself or, anybody, my successor has to meet with and say, I can't fund this program. We don't have enough money for that, which is what all of the council members are doing.
So speaking of money, I want to talk to you about this Healthy Foods Restaurants Initiative. Mm-hmm. And there seems to be a bit of, back and forth between members of the council and the county executive. We're offering incentives to bring healthy food restaurants to the county. And I guess, having been raised in Prince George's County, and I kind of look at this in several ways. Why do you need to offer incentives to bring healthy restaurants to the county if the demand is there?
Well, the reality is that there's a presumption by many. You even heard, I was quite disappointed by even a statement by the representative of the Department of Health, where they're kind of saying...
Whose department? The county?
Well, during the hearing on the bill.
There was a statement from
a representative of the Prince George's County Department of Health that I said, you know, we have to teach people how to eat healthy first. The reality is that people are dying for healthy options. When I've gone to doors and talked to, I've knocked on most of the doors in my district. The biggest complaint people said is that in addition to retail, they're like, I want to go to a nice restaurant. I want to go to I want healthy options. And the reality is that we have fast food options all over our community. And there's an assumption that that's all we want to eat. That's not true. But we also want to make sure that those who are considering, we have a lot of Black business owners, minority business owners who are taking a risk to say, I'm going to bring this into community because I know that there's people that want it. And we want to encourage them. I came there with two business owners in my district with healthy options. E-Life, Dr. Baruch, who actually was a pioneer. He was one of the first that started with his vegan restaurant before vegan was now trendy. And then we have Fresh Greens. And I remember when I was years ago, I was complaining that, why do I have to go to D.C. or Montgomery County to get a chopped or one of the salad places, and then now I've got it down the street from my community. But what we want is more of that. We need more options of that. So we feel like if we're going to send a message to the business community, we want you to come. Look, it is not governments give incentives to businesses up so much. I even noted that we're looking at $9 million for a sports park. We're looking at a lot of developments all in downtown Largo. If you look at the budget now, there's all types of funding for those. It's just not in legislation, but it's funding for those. Look at the bonds that we have from the state, the funding that the state brought down. A lot of those were for a lot of commercial developments and retail developments in Prince George's County. So what we're not doing anything different that's being done in other industries. We're just trying to make sure that we target a different group. Small restaurants, because the reality is that people don't usually give funding for those organizations or those companies the way they do it for bigger companies. But what we're saying is that we know that a lot of these local businesses will do, if we give them a little something, they'll bring the business to our community.
How do you plan on getting the county executive on board for that? I mean, because certainly on this program, I mean, this was before you were on the council, she has spoken more broadly about bringing quality retail, whatever it is, to the county. And so we know that that has been something that she has spoken about. But in these tight fiscal times, how do you get her on board to see what you're saying.
We see the money there. We even noted monies that have been a sort of waste of money that they can move around to fund this program. It's about priorities. And what we encourage the listeners here to do is that you reach out to the county executive. I was quite disappointed to hear her representative not in support and almost saying that they have, you know, other things that they have to do. This is a priority. Our health is a priority. And as I've noted, and we know, Prince George's County has the highest rate of a lot of the chronic diseases when it comes to heart disease, diabetes. I myself are trying to change my living and the way I eat. And I want healthy options. If I have to run somewhere, living busy life running around, I need to know that I can go somewhere in my community and quickly get a healthy option. So we encourage residents, if you support this, we definitely want you to reach out to the county executive's office and make it clear to her that you think that this is a priority that should be put aside in the budget. We're not talking about the amount of money that we're looking at. It's not very much for the outcome that it could bring to our community.
Let's go to Thomas. Calling from Capitol Heights. Thomas, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Thomas, are you there? Thomas, give me a call back if you can. Let's go to Angelo, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Angelo. What's on your mind?
Hi, how you doing today?
Doing just fine, thanks.
All right, yeah. I just have a question for the vice chair. Apparently, driving on the beltway and through the county, and this could be statewide too, you have cars who are just driving totally recklessly, in and out of dodging, in and out of traffic, and it seems like it's becoming a big pattern. Is there anything to try to curb that or any type of plan. That's all I had to say. Thank you.
We have we supported some state legislation that will adding speed cameras on roads like 210. I know South County has a lot of issues when it comes to accidents. And Vision Zero actually show we have a lot of accidents on our roads. So one of the things we have done, we supported that bill, but we also have a commission that's supposed to be focusing on roads that we have high traffic issues or even deaths and accidents. And I would say some of it has to do with some of the infrastructure that we have. Some of this is an infrastructure issue. This is about improving the roads, putting stop signs, speed bumps, traffic lights, all of those things, which we do plan to do. And of course, speed cameras will come in some areas if we do see that the problem continues. But we do have other ways that we can calm down the traffic and calm down actual death fatalities, which we do lead in a region. And this goes back to what I said, infrastructure. If you put the infrastructure in place, less people die because people have to slow down. I mean, Richie Marlboro is a good example of the lack of infrastructure. It's a raceway because you put so many houses in one area and you did not put any traffic stops, any stop signs. So people are on the speed road. And sometimes you can say, well, the person shouldn't be speeding. But the reality is that if you keep having deaths happen in your community, you have to do something. And we have the tools that we have. It just costs.
Angelo, thank you so much for your phone call. I only have a little bit of time left, but talk to me about this plastic foodware issue, which...
Are you talking about the better bag?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
You have to ask for utensils.
For this bill, we're focused on the bag issue, asking for the bag. And what we did, the better bag bill right now is sitting before the council. What we're trying to do is decrease the number of bags on the road. And I know environmentalists have been pushing that, we are using plastic bag, which is not impacting our environment. And I'm talking about this council because the utensils was not a part of this council here.
Right. But I still, how do you feel about that? I mean, I just, it's going to happen in June. I just find it interesting because, for the folks who, you mentioned there's a lot of fast food and, places. Mm-hmm. And I guess there's going to have to be, if there isn't already, there's definitely going to have to be some kind of marketing campaign because you're going to have a lot of ticked off people driving wherever they drive after they pick up their fast food. If there is no straw, if there is no plastic fork, that they have to ask for that.
Well, what we're finding is that we have a little problem. And
that's
some of
true.
And some of the issues in Prince George's County we found is that some of the things that we see on the street, I would tell you this. When we did a pickup, we did a cleanup in Lake Arbor, and what I found was plastic bags, paper straws, utensils, and just like all of the things that you get from fast food restaurants. It's just all over the place. And so one of the things that it helps us is that we're going to try to lessen that because sometimes some people are in their cars with all of this like utensils from past purchases
and
that they should use.
Crap as
And right. And we do think that we just need to preserve more. And, we're trying to get in that. And we want people to know, like, we need to see less litter on the street. And frankly, if we make it harder for some people to get those things, they'll be less likely to throw it on our ground.
Beyond just the plastic utensils, and I think that litter is a pet peeve of mine, wherever it is, that what are the possibilities that, and I know there's been a move to put cameras around in places where there's a lot of dumping, but how can you better fight, just more, widespread litter, whatever it happens to be? Because even as it relates to, fast food and stuff like that, people are still going to buy fast food. Okay. There's got to be, and I don't know what the answer is, but there has to be some kind of punitive way to address the litter problem in the county.
Right, and we are looking at that. The problem is, like, right now, our criminal justice system is full.
Yeah, there's that.
And
yeah.
We have high number of carjackings. We're trying to catch the perpetrators and put them through our justice system. And the justice system is backed up since the pandemic. So the reality is that we don't, these dumping cases where it gets to a criminal case, you said it's state's attorney's office. State's attorney's office was honest with us. They got too many cases that are about people's death.
Life and death.
Yeah. Taken. And so these cases, and I was a lawyer for, 12 years. I've got cases that I filed last year that are just being heard. So if you want to really catch someone and really punish them, the court system just isn't it.
What about civil penalties?
Well, civil penalties would mean fine, and that's what it is, and that's where we can get people with that. But the truth is, all of these things have been tried. Like in Prince George's County, there's been fine. Now they are going to try to get more cameras for the illegal dumping. There are things, laws pending before the council now that we're looking at to address litter. But the reality is that this is a long-term solution that we're all trying to figure out what will it take. One of the things is that we're trying everything. We're finding people. We do have some cases sitting before in the justice system right now that have been pending for a while. And then we also are trying to get more of an anti-litter campaign. And there's all of these little things that we're trying to do. We're looking at the DOE budget to see sort of how we can how much money are they putting forth to address a full campaign to say clean up your community. I mean, when I'm looking at 214 and I'm literally going to a place that I cannot get to without stopping my car in the middle of a road where cars are flying, how is it that I go there and there's trash
everywhere? Yeah, it is a very difficult situation and a complex one. I agree. My final question for you, as you know, Monday, long-serving U.S. Senator, the senior Senator Ben Cardin, announced that he would not be running again. Yesterday, Montgomery County at large council member Will Jawando announced that he's going to run for Senate. There are all kinds of discussions about unannounced elected officials in the state. Certainly there is talk about the county executive running as well. How do you feel about the possibility that she could, run for U.S. Senate? If so, would you support her? Do you think it may be, disruptive? If not, I mean, there are always things in place. If somebody runs, the county's not going to fall apart. But I think from a philosophical or even an emotional feeling for the county, what impact do you think that would have?
Well, I would say I do want to start off by thanking Senator Cardin for his service to the state. He has definitely had an open door, and I've definitely worked with his staff and him, and he's been a great representative. So we look forward to celebrating him. I would say this: I'm looking forward to hearing from all the candidates. I can't speak for someone who has not announced. If the county executive were to run, good luck to her. And I think that, if that's what, each of these individuals want to do, I mean, Will Jawando is a friend from high school. I went to high school with him at St. John's. So I'm definitely, we go way back. Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely proud of him. So I would say this, I am looking forward to hearing from all of the candidates. I think it's going to be more people running than we think. And I look forward to hearing from one of them. And I think for all Prince George's, we have to say, what do we want to, we have to make sure that all of the representatives are going to be really looking at the interest for Prince George's County.
Well, I want to thank you very, very much for coming in again and talking to us so soon. Prince George's County Council Vice Chair Walla Blagay, I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about in the weeks and months to come. But again, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Sure. That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, May 3rd. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.